Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey everyone, welcome to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
As I mentioned before, a little tired because we got so much going on. And I feel like I've been an editing machine lately with all the different podcasts and stuff that I've been working on.
How many podcasts are you working on now? I know you and I work on two together.
Right.
But
right.
How many others do you have?
Well, I just have one other one, which is called Divergent Paths. A friend of mine I've known since high school. She's been starting a business. We're going to get her on the show in a couple of weeks. Okay. She's on vacation right now, but it's fantastic. I mean, it's about late diagnosed ADHD and neurodivergence in business. I really like it. It's doing really well as far as, you know, downloads and plays and all that fun stuff. So.
Well, it's an interesting topic. And I think I've noticed, and I don't know if it's because of social media or Netflix and all the different types of shows on Netflix right now that have to deal with people on different spectrums that have different conditions and how it impacts their lives, that I'm just aware of it more often. Plus, my daughter is a psych major and I hear all of it from her as well. And she's working at the hospital right now. With a different topic, which is dealing with the mental aspect of youth that have been diagnosed with cancer. And she's working at the hospitals directly with those patients and what they deal with the, you know, the emotional struggles and the mental struggles that go along with that. I mean, it's there's so much that goes into it. And like you're saying, this is a fantastic topic for business because people are dealing with different things, right? Everybody's got something going on in their background, right?
Yeah.
You know, in their history, and it led them to the place that they're at. And sometimes it's an extra challenge, and sometimes it's helped them.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's usually a mixed bag. And I think, you know, this is a fantastic topic to dive into.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a great podcast. So I think getting you on there and chatting, you know, get Regina over here and we'll chat with her and we'll make some discoveries. And both of our kids are psych majors. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we should do that show laying on a couch though.
We should just do every show laying on a couch. That would be nice. Let me get some couches in here. You know, what's interesting though about the podcast for that podcast, right? Like, so we started something new this last month. Instead of dropping, and you mentioned Netflix as well, like how they drop episodes, like a bunch of episodes at a time, and you can, you know, go through them quickly and binge on those episodes. So we tried that with this podcast last month. And I figured I'd give a little update. So what's the update? What's interesting is all of our plays come in about threes now. When you look at the daily plays, it's most of them are divisible by three because we launched three podcasts.
You do three at a time.
Okay. I think people are definitely binging, but it's just a little increase. It's actually funny enough, about a 3% increase. So we're going to say it's maybe a win. We'll try it again another couple of months. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, just one of those things to experiment with to see if
I was hoping you're going to say 300%.
I know, right?
Increase.
I know. Well, so the first week when we launched, it was a big jump. It was in the 60s or 70s or something like that because, you know, we had more people. But I wanted to see over a 4 week period to see if it actually, you know, does a difference. We're only at like, you know, what, 3 weeks now. But it's interesting. It's interesting to look at these numbers and sort of track to that. I was watching this YouTuber who is actually now sharing all the money that he makes from all of his YouTube videos and sharing that with the people that are watching. And he does this sort of whiteboard session. This guy, it's called Hey Bricky. It's great.
Yeah.
He does like some Disneyland type podcasts and all this stuff, but great personality, like really cool guy. He was putting together an audio studio. And as you know, I'm sort of nerdy about that. And I've got the new sound bar and all these different things that I've added in, but, I was watching him do his setup and then I discovered this, that he's doing this sharing of things. So I figured, hey, let's share this experiment with people a little bit,
Well, I love the fact that you guys are experimenting on how to grow, right? How do we grow the audience? How do we grow the business? I mean, our podcast is a business, right?
Yeah.
And it's perfect for our guests to kind of talk about how to grow a business.
That it is. Scaled a couple of businesses there. We've got Eli Portnoy. Eli, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
Hey, we talked a little more than we usually do there in the beginning, but we had a lot to cover. So thanks for being patient with us and just hanging in there.
Yeah. Thank you.
We'll get right into this. Why don't you tell us a little about your business and yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I hate to describe myself this way, but I don't think I have a choice anymore. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've been building businesses for the last 15 years. And one of the things that I noticed over the course of starting things up is that there's a superpower that founders have. When someone starts a company, they probably have to do everything. They have to speak to customers. They have to sell those customers. They have to do the product. They're basically doing all of it. And that ends up being a superpower because they're hearing directly from all their customers and their prospects, and they're able to bring that back to the rest of the organization. And then as the business starts to scale, it starts to get bigger and there's more customers and more prospects. All of a sudden, they have to build a team to manage that sale and post-sale process. And they start getting further and further removed from those customers. And as that starts to happen, it becomes much harder to have that superpower. And so the basic idea around BackEngine is, how do we reverse that? How do we use the power of large language models and AI to basically ingest all of the emails and all of the conversations and all of the interactions with customers and prospects and make sure that everyone across the company is hearing what customers and prospects are asking for, what they need, what they want, what they like, and how do you weave that into the way the business operates? So that's the backstory around the business I'm working on right now. And it really stems from my experience trying to build companies and going through that challenge.
So the question that I always like to ask, right, whenever we talk about AI, is, well, you're passing all of your information to this large language model somewhere. How can you trust that all of your information is secure and it's not just now out there in the universe for competitors to see?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think there's a couple of things. So one is the base large language model that's being used to basically like go through the information, that tends to be very very locked down if you work at the enterprise level. So if you're using like ChatGPT or Anthropic or Gemini, you can have like locked down environments that contractually they cannot use the data in any way. They can't train their data on it. But you can't get that if you just use the plain vanilla ChatGPT or Claude and just put stuff in there. So using an enterprise level license, which is what we do and what a lot of the systems that you would work with use, help manage that. Beyond that, you have to make sure that the security of the tool that you're using is SOC 2 compliant and has all of the different pieces in place. But I think the piece that most people misunderstand is they're already sharing this data with companies, right? Like they're using Gmail or Outlook, which means that Google has access to it and Microsoft has access. They're using Zoom, so Zoom has access to their recordings. Like that information's out there. It's just, you're trusting those companies. And if you can develop that same level of trust with the AI company, you can get a lot of power from it.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder what information is not out there. Right? I mean, you've gone through a list and we all kind of fundamentally know that, it's pretty tough to keep anything private nowadays. Like, how do you when you're working with a client and maybe they have a new product, a new service, or something that is, you know, kind of groundbreaking, like how do you keep it kind of under wraps so, you know, other ears, other eyes are not learning about it? I know you're trying to do the private with your licensing, but ultimately, like you said, Gmail and, you know, everything else, Zoom. How do you work with your clients to kind of keep things under wraps for until you're ready to, you know, get out there?
Yeah, and there's it's a really good question. And I think the more information gets out there into more and more systems, the lower the likelihood is that you can keep it private. But the companies that we're talking about, like Zoom and Gmail, they have so much to lose if they expose your information and so little to gain. And so I personally just trust these companies to do the right thing, especially if they're going through the different certifications and the different pieces in place. And like, if you do the security reviews around them, most of them are really locked down. Like I can tell you, for us, for BackEngine, we encrypt absolutely everything at rest and in transit. We encrypt it at the account level. And everything is locked down because we have so much to lose if any of the stuff we see gets exposed out there. So we really care about it. And I think most companies feel that way, but it's important to do the research for sure.
So a lot of people are using AI too. And I've talked about this before to create content, right? And you know, you can tell that content is AI generated many times, right? Like it's in our current world of blah, 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 blah. And you know, it's the same line that you're going to read over and over again. So how do you train the models so that it doesn't seem like it's AI? So it doesn't seem like, you know, it's magic.
It's not so much a focus for us, because what we're doing is we're trying to synthesize the things that we're hearing. And so, and the synthesis is always for internal purposes, not external purposes. So whether it sounds AI generated or not, isn't quite as much of a concern. But I can tell you that like in my personal life, I use AI a lot, or not even in my personal life. And in my job, I'm using AI all the time outside of our product. And I found a few tricks to make it sound a lot less AI-y. And the best trick I have is you have to give it examples to emulate. Turns out these large language models are really good at emulating a style. So if you give it a style and say, these are four examples of things that I've written, I want them to sound like it, it does a much better job. I've also found a lot of success in using ChatGPT's deep research to have it research academic frameworks for how, like, there's a lot of academic research on why certain like language sounds AI-y and some doesn't. And so you just do that research and then you put it into your prompt when you're actually asking it to do something, and then it's able to follow the research and do a better job. So there are definitely tricks, but for the most part, I mean, yeah, you can usually tell when something is AI generated for sure.
I always feel like, you know, the AI can get you, it's like, you write up your, you want to write a blog article, let's say, right? So you come up with, here's the idea for the blog article. And like, I'll even sometimes just dictate to AI what that might be, right? And then it will shoot me a first draft. And then I take that or just an outline or something. And then I'll take that, do a little tweaking myself, send it back. I bring in a human layer to it at like three or four different stops before I produce content that's going to go out to the public. But like you're saying, when it's internal content, like you could just do it. You just train it properly, train it on the individual client's information. So are you taking like notes from client meetings and things like that to you know, because I see that you're pulling in stuff from Slack and all these various other sources, correct?
Yeah.
Like what's the output that I would see if I were a customer using this?
Yeah. So let's say you're an executive and you have, let's say, 72 customers. The very high likelihood is that you are not going to be able to be super hands-on with all 72 of those customers. And then you, on top of that, let's say you have 30 active prospect conversations. You're probably not going to be super involved. How do you, as a founder or as a CEO or as an executive, understand, are there any risks with any of these accounts or any of these prospects? What are they consistently telling us that I should prioritize from a business standpoint? Is it our service model isn't working? Is our product not great? Is our team not doing a great job? How do you have visibility into that unless you basically start joining tons and tons of calls and tons of emails and like basically make it you know, four jobs of yours to be on top of it. So that's the kind of thing that we're trying to understand. Are there patterns? Are there things that are consistently broken? Is there issues with the team? Are there training needs? Are there service model needs? Is pricing too high? Is there a competitor coming? Basically, it's giving you that level of visibility across your business and letting you spend more of your time as an executive dealing with the execution and the strategy and all of that, and still feeling like you really understand what's happening.
Like, we use AI a lot for research, right? Just to research different topics and stuff like that. And everybody's had the experience where they're researching and AI gives them five different answers to basically the same question, depending on the prompt. And, you know, then you go, well, which one is real, right? And it's challenging at times until you kind of figure out the right prompt to get you a correct answer, but then you still got to confirm it's the right answer. So anyway, what's your advice when you're just using AI for research and getting an accurate response?
The thing about large language models is they really want to please. They really, really want to please. And that means that even if they don't have the answer, they're going to sometimes make up an answer. And other times, like when the answer isn't exactly positive, they might change it a little bit, like they'll be a little bit more positive. So there's definitely like risk when you do research. So a couple of tricks. So the first thing is optimize the prompt. There are definitely prompting techniques that will help you get to a better answer. So as an example, you can have it verify its own work. You can tell it the importance of getting it right. Tell it that you will be more pleased to get the right answer than to get something you like. Those are prompting techniques that will get you to a better answer. The second thing is you can have the AI verify itself. So as an example, you can run the research three times and then have it compare the three research and tell you if there's anything inconsistent about it. That will also help you get to the right answer. And those are tricks that you can do in your own prompting, but they're also things that we integrate into how we run AI. So we have verification steps and we have things that like the AI has to do separately as a separate step to make sure that the information we're pulling is accurate. And then we also make sure that in the product, you can always get to the source information. If we're telling you that, you know, this person was super happy and excited and wants to spend more with you, like you can click in and see the exact email or the recording where that information came up. And so that's how we think about it. But it is one of the challenges. It's obviously a super powerful AI is just super powerful, but like everything, it has its risks and you have to be able to manage them.
You know, I feel like one of the other challenges with AI is, you know, I mean, it feels like magic to most people. I could just go to any AI, type in some information, and it's going to give me an answer, right or wrong. It's going to give me an answer. Now, yours is more based on data and all the work that you've done behind the scenes there. But I would assume that you're probably just using like a chatbot or something and just spitting out data. And it probably looks, I mean, and I'm guessing that it probably looks similar to some of the interfaces that we would get on, you know, ChatGPT or Gemini or one of these other sources. Nice user interface, but you've put all this work into the back end of it. How do you sell that you've done all this work and programming to make your AI smarter than just opening up a ChatGPT instance?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. So one is a lot of the benefit is all of the context that we're putting into it. So if you go into ChatGPT and you say, what do my customers care about? There's no way it can answer it because it doesn't actually know what your customers have said. And so a lot of our sales motion revolves around the context that we're ingesting to make this smarter. And people can wrap their heads around that a little bit more. The second thing is almost all of our sale process includes some form of proof of value where we'll actually load up your data and let you play with it and see just how accurate it is. And a lot of times it's just more like show than tell, because I can talk to someone about how much more accurate our stuff is because of all the things that we've done, and someone might conceptually understand it, but it's a very hard way to sell. It's just much easier to say, do you understand this component around like how we have all this context so we can actually help you do things that a plain vanilla ChatGPT can't? Yes. Okay, great. You might have questions about accuracy because you've been using ChatGPT and you've noticed that every now and then it hallucinates, it does all this weird stuff. Why don't we just show you? Let's get you 7 days of access so you can play with it and like run against it and see. And there's obviously a trade-off in everything. For us, the trade-off is higher accuracy at the expense of cost. Like it just costs more because we have to run stuff multiple times and verify and do all of that kind of stuff. And so for a user, that might not be a good trade-off, but for a business it is. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Hard to sell except
to just show it to them. Do you ever work with clients that want the AI agents to promote their business more often in search? So they have to kind of train these agents to, I don't know, their positioning, their branding, their positioning so that, you know, they're getting the correct audience. Do you deal with clients and work with them on in that aspect of taking advantage of AI?
We don't, but it is such an interesting field. Like the idea, I mean, because I think we're all probably in the same boat that like I use Google so much less and I'm constantly like asking ChatGPT questions around like it happened the other day. I wanted to have some help with like stretching. So I looked up and I found someone on ChatGPT and that's who I called. And I think a lot of users are going down that path. So optimizing to make sure that like SEO, but in the context of ChatGPT is fascinating. I don't work with customers in that way, but if you guys know, I would love to talk
totally.
To someone that's super fascinating.
And they've got to come up with a better name for it. I've seen AIEO. And I'm like, that sounds like, what is it? EIEIO, you know? Yeah, we need a name for that. Yeah. Somebody's got to do that. It is like, it's something that, you know, is very important. There's also the finding of customers. So it seems like you're going through data that they already have. Does your AI give any information for like lookalike audiences or, you know, potential customers that you could, you know, go out and search for and find?
Yeah, for sure.
And discover?
So the way we can help with that is if we have all of the information from your customers and your prospects, and we see what prospects are converting and what prospects aren't converting and what customers are happy and not happy, we can use that to help you understand what are the criteria that lead to a happy customer, what are the criteria that lead the prospect to actually sign up with you. And we can also help you understand how you personally can like make sure your business is managing folks through the what questions lead to answers that you can then use, what talking points, what objections are coming up, and what are the best ways to answer them that actually move people along that funnel. So we can definitely help you identify the types of folks that you should go after. We can help you identify the triggers that tell you that someone is a good candidate, and we can help you optimize the flow and your go-to-market to help you move people through those stages to ultimately get to a happier customer. To me, like what customers and prospects are saying is such a rich data source that has so many different unlocks for things that you can do with it. And that's a great example.
So how do you use it for you, for your business? How do you identify those potential prospects out there? And, you know, tell us, what is a good prospect for you? What kind of company do you like working with?
Yeah. So one of the things that we found in our data is that a company that's either going through a lot of scaling, so growing really quickly, or is having issues where they're contracting really quickly, those are that two sides of that barbell are the best types of customers for us. So we are now constantly looking using like LinkedIn and all these other places for companies that are either growing very rapidly or contracting very quickly, because those tend to be great trigger points for us. So that's a lot of our outbound is focused on that. And then once we talk to those companies, we are basically developing an entire script based on what we've seen work and what we've seen not work in our conversations, so that we know both how to reach out to them. And then once we engage with them, how to talk to them, how to walk them through it, what kind of demos to do. And then once they become customers, we're doing the same thing to figure out how do we make sure that they're getting value consistently, all the way to the point of identifying what risks can potentially come up that might lead to churn. And so we can start looking for those churn risks and identifying them and mitigating them. So it's the whole cycle from who to reach out to, how to reach out to them, how to talk to them, how to convert them, and how to keep them happy. And it's all in our data. So we're just mining it and finding these answers.
Would you take on a company that's a pure startup?
Yeah, we would. I mean, there's definitely like, if they don't have customers, it's not going to be helpful because we won't really be able to mine it for much. But as long as they have customers, we absolutely can. And we work with a couple of companies that are on the smaller side.
The other thing, like I was thinking about challenges, and this one just hit me too, as you were talking, like, going through LinkedIn, you're talking to these companies that are growing, and, you know, everybody's hearing like, oh, I should be integrating some sort of AI into my business, right? Like everybody's thinking that. And What are the myths? Like, what are the things that, like, people are thinking that AI can do, and then it's just like, no, it can't do that. Like, what, or things that perhaps you are seeing that are like, just, okay, this is not a use case for AI. This is going to be a problem.
You mean take over the world? That's
one of them. That's one of them. Yeah. I think a lot about Waymo. I don't know if you guys have Waymo up, but you do. So we have them here. And I think about like the evolution of Waymo. You know, 10 years ago, we were talking about self-driving cars and Waymo was showing one of those cars. And it took like 10 years for that to come to fruition because you can have a zero failure rate. It can't be 99% good. It definitely can't be 90% good. And it absolutely can't be 80% good. It has to be 100% good. And the AI has a really hard time getting to 100%. It has a really easy time getting to 80%. With a bunch of tuning and tweaking, you can get it to like 90%. So the reason I bring this all up is when I think about what it can't do mission critical things. It can't do things without a human in the loop. In a business setting, like the idea that you could have it do your entire SDR, like outbound, and basically do all of your prospecting and find you the perfect person and reach out with the perfect message. And like, I'm not sure it's there yet. I don't think it can do all of support either. It can do some of it, but not all of it. I think the best places to put AI are where it's empowering someone to go faster and do more and do better, but always with a human in the loop. And to me, that's I don't know if that's going to be true forever, but at least right now, that's, I think, where AI is.
That sort of hits on one of the other things too, of like when selling AI to a company, you know, let's say you're presenting to the entire company, a company of 20 people or something like that. Of those 20 people, there's going to be a few of them that are thinking like, okay, we're bringing in AI. There goes my job, right? How do you overcome that?
Yeah, I mean, the tool is very much oriented around empowering people rather than removing people. I think we can make people more efficient. I think we can make them help them focus more on the strategic stuff. And I think we can do a lot of the stuff that's tedious and manual that they would have to do otherwise. But like one of the things that we get pushed on a lot in our product is, okay, you're telling me that these things are happening. Can you actually make recommendations? And we shy away from making those recommendations because I think that level of intuition, you still need a human for. Like we can present all the facts. We can help you get to the point of like not having to go and pull it from all these places and spend, you know, days and days trying to like get it all there. But once it's all there, I do think we still need a human to then say, okay, what that means is that for this customer who's unhappy because of these three reasons, the way I'm going to approach it, my plan is X, Y, and Z. And so when people see the product and see the approach we're taking and understand that this is meant to make them more valuable rather than make them redundant, people tend to get very comfortable with it.
Yeah, ultimately, these high-level decisions need to still be made by a human, right? A CEO or, you know, a C-level person within a company still needs to take all this information and interpret it what's best for that company, because AI can't tell you what's best for that company at that time. It can make recommendations, but, you know, again, it's not necessarily always accurate because you don't know. I mean, AI doesn't know exactly where you want to take the business or you're ready to pivot or, you know, all those things. You can try to come up with the right prompts, but I agree with you. I think ultimately C-level people still need to make ultimate decisions, the hard decisions, you know, to steer the company. And I think that's why what you're providing is so important, is like teaching these companies how to maneuver this. Because I have a feeling a lot of times, like Russ was saying, is like you kind of rely on AI, or I've seen people rely on AI too much. And they're going, oh, it's going to help me make this decision. Well, it's going to give you information. You need to make the decision. And trying to train those people, and it sounds like that's where you come in, helping them do that.
Yeah, that's the intent. That's definitely how we're thinking about it.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. So if somebody wants to reach out to you and get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, they can go to our website, which is backengine.ai. They can email me. It's eli@backengine.ai. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, at linkedin.com/ELI Portnoy. PORTNOY. And yeah, I'd love for people to get in touch.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I mean, it's such a fun topic because it's like on everybody's mind, like, how do I do this? So appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot
of fun. Thanks a lot,
Eli. And thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we are happy to take your questions. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. If there's an area of your business where you'd like some solid advice, we could build a whole show around it. So let us know. Reach out to us. Go to DIYForBusinessPodcast.com. The link's in the podcast description. We thank you for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.